Hello and welcome. My name is Habib Haydarian and I'm a program manager on the .NET team. I hope you guys enjoyed this morning's keynote as much as I did. There is a lot of stuff happening in .NET, and so since today's session is a level 200 talk, what I'll do is I'll basically go through this sort of new investments as well as new innovations in .NET, breadth first, and then this session will essentially serve as a forward pointer to at least five other sessions that we have at TechEd this week. So think of this session as your GPS / compass for all the other talks that are happening for the rest of the week. I think one of the easiest ways to think about what is happening in the next version of .NET is a very simplified view of the world. And the way I like to think about it is, basically one of the key strengths of .NET is its flexibility, so that you can pretty much use it in any scenario that you want. Regardless of whether you're writing a desktop app, a device app, a ASP.NET app, a cloud app, it's all one and the same .NET framework, and we continue to add a lot of value in the existing .NET framework, and as you'll see in a few seconds. And so everything from WPF to Windows Forms on the client side, and then on the server side, your favorite frameworks, including MVC and Web API, web pages, and so forth. Now, in this new device-first cloud-first environment, what we've also heard from lots of developers is, can I please have a mode of .NET that allows me to target .NET to very small devices, as well as can I target it to hyperscale cloud scenarios that require a much lower footprint as far as memory consumption and working set and just size on disk is concerned. So today, what we'll also do is, at Build, we announced this new .NET native initiative, and today will be the first discussion around this mode of .NET for cloud-optimized workloads. And really, the main thing that you see for both of .NET native as well as the cloud-optimized version of .NET is the fact that we've really taken .NET and refactored it. We made it much leaner, much faster, but it's exactly the same .NET, meaning you basically use the same programming environments, programming languages to write for these new modes of .NET. And I'll show you a demo that will make this a lot more clear. The other thing that we've done is invested a tremendous amount in the core infrastructure of .NET. This includes our runtime, with brand new investments around our JIT compiler, some of the new capabilities, which we'll cover in a different session, around a new processor instruction set around SIMD, this Roslyn compiler as a service initiative, where we announced it at Build as well. And last but not least, we continue to invest in our libraries. But I think one of the most exciting aspects of .NET going forward is the fact that we are truly embracing openness. So what we did at Build is we announced Roslyn, the new compiler, as being completely open sourced. And what you'll see is a continuous wave of announcements around .NET embracing openness, open source, open documentation, and so forth. So it makes it even easier now if you would like to both see the source code for .NET and also contribute to it. But let's get on to more details. I am not sure whether you saw the announcement on our blog on Tuesday, but we just announced .NET 4.5.2. Now, for those of you that might have remembered Visual Studio 2013 launch, we made this promise that will continue to deliver value for .NET and not necessarily tied it to a big release of Windows or Visual Studio. And this is exactly our promise as far as .NET 4.5.2 is concerned. So we released .NET 4.5.1 around November, And now, just this week, we released .NET 4.5.2. Now, what is in .NET 4.5.2? Overall, I'd categorize it into two big buckets. First of all, we've made numerous performance, compatibility, and reliability fixes. So by upgrading to .NET 4.5.2, your apps just get better without you having to do any work. But also, we've added six new small but impactful features. And I'm not going to go through all the details of these features. I'll provide a link so you can sit down and basically read through all these. But I'm going to call out a few very notable ones. The first one is we received a lot of feedback that with ASP.NET, people want to be able to reliably schedule async work items. You can do that now with .NET 4.5.2. The other thing that we've heard is as high DPI becomes much more prominent, developers want Windows forms to behave much better in high DPI environments. And so now you can basically resize Windows forms controls using the system DPI settings, which hopefully will make life even easier. Just a couple more things to point out. We've made a slew of enhancements to our both debugger and compiler infrastructure, and also you can now basically receive ETW events out of process. So if you do want to add tracing instrumentation to your app using ETW, you can do that now out of process. As I said, the complete feature list is actually available on our blog right now. There's a tremendous amount of content to go through today, but I just want to make sure that everyone is aware that we just released .NET 4.5.2. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use this slide as our roadmap. So every time there's a segment that we're going to walk through, I'll highlight exactly the section that we'll drill into. So let's talk about the existing .NET. What are we going to do in the next version of .NET to improve the current version of frameworks and APIs, including Windows Forms, WPF, ASP.NET, and so forth. This is what the, I would say, majority of folks' world looks like. You have an existing set of investments, and what you really would like to do is move it along in at least one of three dimensions. The first one is be able to modernize your existing desktop application. So, for example, if you have a WPF or Windows Phone application and you want to now take advantage of new devices and so forth, we received a lot of feedback that people want to be able to participate and make it very easy to leverage .NET on devices. The other thing is around reach. Reach meaning additional devices that are not necessarily in the Microsoft ecosystem. This includes both Android and iOS devices, and you'll see that through our partnership with Xamarin, we are moving that even further along so that you can leverage your existing assets, your existing skills to write .NET applications that easily run on iOS as well as Android devices as well. And last but not least, this idea of the cloud. How do I take my existing assets, existing skills, and be able to embrace the cloud, be it Azure websites or Azure services, and making sure that I can run my assets both on-prem as well as in the public cloud. So there are a couple of investments that we have both announced that we're making further investments in. The first one is Azure Mobile Services. This is basically the ability to quickly and easily add services to your mobile applications. In my mind, it's a very, very powerful and easy framework to be able to do things like push notifications to your mobile apps. And it's a really, really great productivity boost for your mobile apps. The second one is this continuous wave of ASP.NET updates. I think one of the things that I certainly underestimate is the fact that on ASP.NET, we continuously make these brand new releases that aren't necessarily one ginormous release. This includes everything from web forms to updates in MVC, web API, Signal R, as well as web jobs, which we've previewed at Build Now. So if you are an ASP.NET developer, there's an incredible amount of investments that's going on in ASP.NET today as we speak. And what you're going to see tomorrow, in fact, is even more discussions around these new investments. Now, one thing that I'd like to announce today is the fact that as of this morning, about 10 a.m., we've now made available what we're referring to as .NET client libraries for Microsoft services. So the premise is very simple. You have existing .NET applications, regardless of whether they're ASP.NET apps or client apps such as WPF or WinForms. And the question is, how do you easily take advantage of services such as authentication, SharePoint services, O365, and so forth? So what we've done is we are releasing a number of open source .NET client libraries that you can not only use on the Microsoft platform, but also you can use on iOS as well as Android, where you can target Microsoft services. So the four services that I've listed here are Azure Active Directory, O365 for things like mail, contacts, and so forth, Azure Mobile Services, and then last but not least, Application Insights, which is a brand new offering from Microsoft for application performance monitoring and management. So one might ask, why should I care about these .NET client libraries? Well, the answer is actually quite simple. Now, this is on purpose. It's not legible. It's not meant to be read. But the thing I want to point out here is how much boilerplate code you have to write when you don't use one of these client libraries today. So on your left-hand side is what you typically have to do today to be able to basically access your mails in O365. And on the right-hand side, you have the exact same functionality using at least, I would say, 50% less code. But I think the thing that really excites me about the .NET client libraries for Microsoft services is the fact that a lot of the concepts around HTTP headers, authentication, and so forth, you no longer have to worry about. I'll show you in a second how easy it is to actually make a call to one of these services in a second. Speaking of easy, I am not sure whether any of you have tried writing an application that calls into one of the Microsoft services, but this is the new world of calling into Azure services. As you can see, authentication is super, super, super easy. You simply call one API that allows you to basically use any kind of OAuth authentication, whether if it's from Microsoft Azure, Facebook, or any other provider that provides authentication for their services. And then here's an example of how you basically go through the number of events on your calendar that are stored in O365. You can see, again, it's incredibly simple. You instantiate a new Exchange client, and you simply then go and get all the events that are as part of the calendar. The client libraries experience in Visual Studio is very, very easy. The idea is you simply, and I'll show you briefly, you access these services through the service manager. You add a reference to your project, essentially. You connect it to one of these services. And then what happens is we automatically download all these new packages for your application, which then allows you to simply make a call to one or more of these services. So let me switch over now and show you a brief demo of what that looks like. I am going to create a brand new WPF app. And again, the purpose here isn't to show you anything elaborate. I just want to show you how easy it is to go and do that for your existing apps today. So let's go and add that. And you can see it's just a vanilla WPF app. I'm going to right-click, and I'm going to say Add, and then say Connected Service. And what happens is you noticed I've already logged into my account. And then I can use any of these services that I want to basically make a call into. So let's go and grab my files. And then once I've done that, then I want to indicate the set of permissions that I want. So I want to be able to, for example, edit or delete the user's files. Or if I want less permissions, I can simply just go and read the files. But for now, let's just go and select both. Once I do that, I press OK. Notice what happens. In my Solution Explorer, I do want to mention this is all pre-alphabet, so you're going to see lots of jiggling in Solution Explorer as it starts to add a bunch of services in the properties. But the thing I want to point out is this. We also now, as soon as you add one of the, a reference to one of these services, we auto-generate some sample code for you. So in this case, this is a sample code for going through and getting all the files that are associated with this account. And again, you can see how simple it is to actually go and make that calls. And what that means is if you want to connect to one of the Azure services now, it literally takes a couple of lines of code to basically either get the files, get your calendar, or add an event to your existing calendar. One of the things I also want to point out is as soon as you add a connected service, it automatically goes and adds it for all the services you might be interested in. So, for example, if you want to, let's say, use SharePoint services, we've also added the references for SharePoint services. So you can simply see all the SharePoint APIs that have automatically been added for your application, and you can just as easily call into the services as you saw me call into the get files in the get files method. So you can see it's an extremely simple way now to consume Microsoft services going forward. And what you'll see is this. Because these are open source libraries, you're going to see us work on these libraries in the open. So, for example, as you pull down the latest alpha, if you don't like an API, if you see a bug, you can do one of two things. You can either open a bug, or if you choose to, you can actually do a pull request, make the fix yourself, and then contribute back the source code as well. So you no longer have to wait for Microsoft, so to speak, to be able to actually fix a bug in one of these libraries, which I think is a tremendous benefit going forward. And that's a common theme that you're going to see going forward. As I said, these libraries are available today. In fact, there's the link that you see down there. And the thing that I really would like to encourage you is once you subscribe to the feed, you're going to see new libraries being added all the time. And you're going to be able to see bugs being fixed in the open all the time. So it's a great way to actually keep track of what is going on as far as the new libraries are concerned. And as usual, since these are alpha bits, we'd love to get your feedback. So as part of this new .NET initiative of being open and transparent, we from now on, we'll pretty much put out the latest and greatest version of our software, and then we'd love for everyone to give us feedback and contribute to the source code as well. Okay. We covered essentially one of the investments that we've done in the existing .NET framework, not to mention the .NET 4.5.2 that we just released. One area that I'd like to focus on right now is if you want to develop applications for devices such that you have a much smaller footprint, your memory consumption is a lot less, and the application starts a lot faster, you may not necessarily want the entire, I know you guys will chuckle, 1.6 gig installer that comes down with .NET framework as it is today. You might want a much smaller framework. In fact, you might not want to install a framework on the machine at all. So with this new .NET optimized for device, what actually happens is, and I'll show you an example as well, when you compile your app, the .NET framework libraries actually get linked into your application. So you now deploy your libraries and .NET framework as part of your app. So you never have to worry about side-by-side issues or another app breaking your app if they install the latest and greatest version of .NET. So that is a tremendous benefit for developers who want to write applications specifically optimized for devices. Now, as part of the set of frameworks as well as libraries for device applications, in build, we announced universal apps. And the idea behind universal apps is very simple, that you can write the same type of business logic on your Windows tablet, on your Windows phone device, and in the future also on Xbox, and basically use the exact same code, including your portable class libraries, to be able to run your app on all these devices. The only thing that would need to change is things like the presentation layer. To give an example, there is no Kinect on your tablet. So if you're writing an application that uses Kinect on Xbox, then you have to basically make sure that that only is that is factored out when it runs on tablet or a phone. But the rest of your code looks exactly the same. And I think universal apps are a great, great way to, you know, write your application, including your portable class libraries, and be able to leverage that exact code in many, many different areas. And I just alluded to this new notion around .NET Native. .NET Native is exactly as the name suggests. We take the existing C# code, compile it to IL, and then we use this exact same C++ optimizing backend to compile the IL to native instructions so that when you actually run the app, there is no more jitting at all. It just launches as if you were starting a native C++ code. One thing I do want to mention is for V1, .NET Native is specifically targeted for store applications, but we are looking at how we bring some of the capabilities to different scenarios. I'll give you an example. When we mention to folks that with .NET Native, because your libraries get compiled into your binary, and the framework does as well, they love the idea of this simple deployment model, right? You never have to worry about deploying your libraries and .NET framework with your app, and they want to have the same set of capabilities for existing WPF and MoveForms apps. So we're looking at various features and functionalities. Okay, let me show you a brief demo of what .NET Native actually looks like in the real world. Let me go and open up an existing solution that I have. That looks like a good one. And I don't need to save the solution. And I'll show you what .NET Native looks like. The thing I really want to remind folks is that .NET Native is basically an optimization step. That's all it is. So here I have a vanilla application, and I've got a breakpoint set up in my app, and I will go ahead and run the app as is. Once I hit the breakpoint, you notice the usual things. Obviously, in my modules window, all of my .NET framework libraries are loaded. And also, I can do things like look at my member variables in my locals or any of my watch windows. So that's not very exciting in its own. So let me go ahead and stop the debugger. And then I'm going to right-click on my project. And then you notice there's a brand new option called Enable for .NET Native. And once I do that, what actually happens is, first of all, because it's a preview release, we put up a really nice help page to get you started with .NET Native. And then what we also do is we run a report to make sure that if we find any issues, you folks can give us feedback of any issues that you found with the tool while you were running your app through the .NET Native toolchain. Once I've done that, the only other step is to right-click on my project and select in build just to compile with .NET Native tool, and then I'll go ahead and build the solution. Now, one of the things that you'll notice with this is, let me just go and remove this app, is the fact that this actually will take about 26, 27 seconds. The question comes around of why does that actually happen? Why is it taking a lot longer to compile with .NET Native than it is with normal IL code? And the reason is this. Because we use the exact same C++ optimizing compiler as C++ does, we take the IL, and it does a tremendous amount of work on the IL. One example, to give you an idea of what it does, is it actually does what we call tree shaking. It removes all the unused dependencies in your code, so your code is the leanest, fastest code possible. And that's why you see a much, much smaller reduction compared to, for example, your engine code today. The other thing that you'll see, again, this is all preview, but we generate this report to show you exactly what we did with the IL that was consumed by .NET Native. So previously, I started the application. Let me go and start the application again and then see what the key differences are. And notice anything different? Previously, these were actually separately loaded DLLs. Now they are linked into the same executable. There aren't essentially .NET assemblies lying around anymore. They're all linked to the same application. But what we do in the debugger is we basically keep track of all the .NET libraries that were used to build the binary, and then later on you can kind of reverse engineer and figure out which libraries was the application built with. The other thing I want to mention is the fact that despite the fact that this is all native code running now, there's no more managed code running at this stage, you can still debug your code as you do today. So I can still inspect my variables, and also I can use any of the debugger windows. Now, what kind of improvements are we seeing as far as perf improvements are concerned? In some instances, we're seeing improvements up to 46% in startup improvement. And also, as far as the memory set, the working set is concerned, we're seeing improvements up to 20%. So by you just building your application with .NET Native, you get all these benefits that you, all these benefits for free without having to do anything else. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm a tree shaking.
Yes.
Is it only looking for specific DLLs or modules, or is it getting to the part of you only referencing this part of the code in that DLL?
So the question was around the tree shaking. Exactly how is the tree shaking done? The tree shaking is done at the API level, meaning if an API is not used in the assembly that you're linking in, it actually gets left out. So you're only linking in the APIs that the executable actually uses. That's how it works. Okay. Excellent. While we're on the topic on building optimized client applications, let's talk about cross-plat development. This comes up all the time in terms of I love my existing .NET investments, but what I really want to do is I want to be able to now write applications that either target iOS or Android. How do you actually go about doing that? So first of all, I think this slide kind of describes the current struggle. What happens is people want both reach, meaning people want to be able to reach as many users as possible, but they also want rich, meaning people want richness in their application. Typically with web, you get a lot of reach, meaning you can reach a lot of users because browsers are pretty much everywhere. However, for some scenarios, you might not get as much richness. So then you have to make this trade-off of, do I now write my app in three different languages with three different skill sets, with three different programming environments? Or do I basically go for the lowest common denominator, which is the web? And that's something that we're seeing over and over again. So the one thing that is, I think, great about .NET and our partnership with Xamarin is the idea that you no longer have to make that trade-off. Basically, the notion is this. With Xamarin, we started very strong both technical and business partnership, I would say around November of last year. You can now use the exact same .NET code on both iOS as well as Android. And the idea is that you don't have to, you or your organization don't have to learn how to write Objective-C or Java to be able to write your apps. And the way this works is this. Basically, you write your .NET app as is, and then because Xamarin exposes 100% of the Android and iOS APIs through .NET, you can then simply build your .NET app, and through the Visual Studio add-ins from Xamarin, you compile your app for both iOS as well as Android, but it's exactly the same .NET code. The only difference, and this is what you see on the top of the slides, is the fact that each of the three platforms have their own UI stack. And that's where things differ. For example, on the Microsoft stack, the UI is obviously XAML. And then on Android is AXML, and on iOS is XIB. And so that's the only thing that you have to factor in when you now write your applications for different devices. As far as your business logic is concerned, including your database access layer and so forth, it all remains the same, which I think is a tremendous, tremendous boost in terms of both savings and productivity. Now, this is our vice president, Soma, and he's made it very, very clear that we will continue our strong relationship with Xamarin so that if developers want to essentially leverage Xamarin for their cross-device scenarios, we will be there to support our developers and also developers who are using Xamarin as well. Okay. So far what we've covered is the device portion of what we're doing in .NET going forward. Let's talk a little bit about this thing that we're referring to as cloud optimized. I imagine a lot of you in the audience is using ASP.NET today, regardless of whether if it's web forms, whether it's MVC, whether if it's SignalR, or any of the six or seven different frameworks that we have today for building .NET server and cloud applications. It's very similar to the device scenario. What we've heard is a lot of developers don't want to essentially pay the overhead tax in both servicing .NET framework as well as these large side-by-side installations that you get several gigabytes of .NET framework code on the server or in the cloud. What folks really want to do is, just like .NET native, they want to be able to basically deploy the CLR and the framework with the application. So if I were to update application A, it has no impact on application B. And that's exactly the notion or the premise behind the cloud-optimized mode of .NET that we're working on. The one thing I want to mention is this is even pre-alpha. What you're going to see, hopefully this week, very shortly, is an announcement of a set of command line tools around the cloud-optimized version of .NET, plus, exactly similar to the Roslyn C# compiler, the cloud-optimized version of .NET is going to be open source from day zero, meaning you can now pull down requests, contribute to it, make changes, and go from there. Let me now walk you through the six key benefits of ASP.NET vNext and what we're referring to as the modern web. I'd say one of the greatest things about the ASP.NET vNext is the fact that it's completely modular. I love the idea of pay for play. So if you only want to use a small chunk of ASP.NET for your scenario, you'll only use that section through NuGet and nothing else. And if you want to pull down the entire thing, you pull down the entire thing because that's what your application calls for. The next thing is this idea of seamless transition from on-prem to the cloud. What we're seeing today is as people want to transition their app to the cloud, often they start with a hybrid scenario. So some parts of the app might be running in the cloud, some of it on-prem. And it's a pretty hard transition at times because you now have to think of kind of this hybrid world where some parts of your application need to be if-defed out because they don't work or they work differently on the cloud than they do on-prem. Open source with contributions, another massive, massive benefit. So as I said, everyone in the world now will be able to both view the source code for the next version of ASP.NET and also be able to contribute to it using your favorite set of editors and tools. Faster dev cycle. You're going to see tomorrow two in-depth sessions on the ASP.NET vNext where the idea of being able to simply save your C# code and refresh your browser. There is no more build required because we use the power of Roslyn to dynamically compile your code as you save your file. Choosing your editors and tools. We perfectly understand that when it comes to the web, people have their preferences for what editors and what browsers and tools folks want to use, and we've made it completely open. So if today you're used to Sublime or any other text editor, you can simply continue using that with .NET, ASP.NET VNX as well. And did I say fast? It is significantly faster in a lot of scenarios than what you have today, simply because it is a lot leaner and smaller as well. And I'll go into a little bit more detail on that as well. But I would highly encourage you that we have two in-depth sessions tomorrow where we're going to go through this a lot more. And I have those in the backup slides as well. The idea behind, one of the core premises behind enabling the modern web and cloud is the fact that it doesn't matter what type of application you want to write, whether if it's an LOB application, whether if it's a LOB desktop app with web backend or modern web app, ASP.NET VNext enables all those scenarios. So you're not necessarily locked in an exact certain way of doing things. What I mean by that is, if you remember, I mentioned the pay-for-play. So if you're writing an existing, if you have an existing LOB application on the web, you can continue to use the exact same set of APIs and frameworks as you do today. However, if you decide that you want a smaller version that only targets a certain number of APIs, you can pull down only that subset of ASP.NET VNext. Common improvements. This is one of those things where we are spending a tremendous amount of time on the fundamentals. So whether if it's consistency, making things a lot more modular, tracing and diagnostics, all of those will be a lot more consistent across ASP.NET VNext, where you don't have all these different frameworks to trace and debug your code. And then dependency injection also is a first-class citizen when it comes to ASP.NET VNext. And as I said, in tomorrow's session, you're going to see a lot more detail on both of these. Faster dev cycles. One of the feedbacks that I know I receive on a regular basis is when people look at things like PHP or Node, they compare the development cycle, meaning in Node, for example, I can simply save my file and then hit my browser, and then all the changes are there and present. With ASP.NET today, you have to essentially go through this build step. You press Control-Shift-B to build your app. It gets deployed and so forth. Well, with ASP.NET VNext, you now be able to exactly do what you can do if you're using Node or PHP today, which is simply save your file and everything else is taken care of. And as I said, because the framework is shipped as part of your app now, you no longer have to worry about things like version resiliency when it comes to installing multiple frameworks. So on the same machine now, if you have, for example, three different apps using all different versions of the runtime and framework, they no longer can in any way, shape, or form basically stomp on each other, because everything is app local, meaning it just lives in a directory. It's just a bunch of files. There is no more installation to the registry. There's nothing like that anymore. So apps basically own their own destiny. As part of our promise around security and making sure that things get serviced regularly, if there is a zero-day security bug, it will be patched by Microsoft, as we do today. So it's not the case that suddenly, that because you have different versions of the runtime and framework on your machine, you'll have to worry about having to figure out how to patch a zero-day patch across the several machines. Same code runs in deployment production. This is a really, really important point. We've seen this far too many times. Let's say you as a developer are now building your application and you have, God knows, you know, version X with 50 different patches on your machine, and then the set of APIs and framework and CLR on the server are, you know, might have 11 patches only. So suddenly you build your app locally, everything works fine, you deploy to the server, and then everything falls over. The beautiful thing about having everything in a folder, you basically deploy your CLR and your framework all with your app. right? So the exact same environment and APIs that you have locally are the exact same that you have on the when you deploy the bits as well. So you don't have to worry about any of those problems with the remote machine behaving differently than the local box that you have. And then I think one of the core benefits is the fact that you as a developer can opt in. So if you don't want a new version of .NET, you don't opt in, as opposed to today where it's a all or nothing deal, meaning if there's a latest version of .NET and then an app installs that version, all apps get upgraded to that latest version. So you're now pretty much stuck with that version and that version only. With the new version of ASP.NET, that will not be the case because each application can have its own framework and runtime. Fast runtime performance. Tomorrow you're going to see these, in my mind, amazing demos that show all these things off. But you're going to see a lot better application performance because, as I said, we have really, really whittled down .NET, so it's the leanest and fastest, and only has the things that a web or a server-based application needs. This also includes lower memory and higher density as well, so you can host more than one app on the server and many of them as well. As far as developer productivity is concerned, as I mentioned, you now have a choice. You can either develop in Visual Studio, or if you're much more comfortable with Notepad++, you can basically use that to develop ASP.NET VNext applications. But I think there's a much simpler model to reason about your code rather than having everything fully baked in and integrated so that you can't adopt or use your favorite code editor. And then last but not least, the seamless transition from on-prem to cloud. As I said, one of the fundamental things that a lot of developers deal with is as soon as they move their app from on-prem to the cloud, their caching suddenly completely breaks because it's not resilient across several machines. With ASP.NET VNext, that's all been fixed because ASP.NET VNext is basically cloud-aware. So it knows exactly how to do distributed caching without the developer having to write all this boilerplate code. As I said, cloud-ready, configuration, session, cache, it's all there. And then with diagnostics, you can run and debug in the cloud, and you get this beautiful integrated set of experiences within Visual Studio where F5 just works, and you don't have to configure this and configure that to make things work. So, as I said, there's a lot more detail coming on this tomorrow, but I just want to give you a teaser with respect to what the cloud optimized of .NET will look like going forward. These are the set of capabilities that you're going to see across your favorite frameworks, regardless of whether if it's SignalR, web pages, web APIs. And the two things that I do want to point out is on the right-hand most column, you'll see there are a couple of additional features that you get as part of opting into the cloud-optimized version of ASP.NET. One is being, as I said, it's fully side-by-side, so you can deploy the .NET with your app now. And then the other one is because of this much leaner, smaller version of ASP.NET, you get a lot better throughput, as well as things like faster startup and low memory. Okay, so if you look at our journey right now, we essentially have gone through the top part of the diagram, the middle part, both the .NET native part as well as the cloud-optimized part. Let's now focus a little bit on the set of core capabilities that we're adding to .NET to make everyone's .NET great. So these are things like your runtime, your compilers, your libraries, where we are making a tremendous amount of investment, and you're going to see in a second where things just get, in my mind, orders of magnitude better as far as the experiences are concerned. So one of those areas that we're investing in is that we are, some of you might be aware that at Build we introduced a brand new version of the C# compiler codenamed Roslyn. The premise behind Roslyn is very, very simple. The original version of the C# compiler, I believe, was started maybe in the late 90s, and it was all written in C++. And what it meant is it was basically a black box. You gave it some C# code, it did some stuff, and then it spat out IL. The problem with that is the fact that you really miss out on this rich, rich information that the compiler has access to while it's compiling your code. I'll give you a couple of examples. Code analysis. You would not believe how many times I get feedback on, well, I want to write a rule for FXCop, or I want to change FXCop in such and such a way. Well, you can't do any of that because you don't actually have access to all the information that the compiler has. With the new Roslyn compiler, which is exactly that. We took the C++ version of the C# compiler, that sounds right, and then we rewrote the C# compiler in C#. And so what it means now is that, and because the Roslyn compiler is all open source, you can now access the C# compiler just like anyone else can. And there are three key benefits if you really think about what that means. And I'll show you an experience that I think is just the tip of the iceberg. But the idea is now you're moving away from an isolated compiler that's completely closed, and you can't really extend it in any way, shape, or form, to a compiler where you can do whatever you want as far as hooking to the compiler is concerned. So one of my favorite examples is the current IDE, I believe, has 6 or 7 refactorings, and we get constant complaints of, why aren't you guys adding more? To be honest with you, the reason why we're not adding more is because it's so hard to write refactorings for the existing compiler. With the new compiler, it's so easy to be able to write refactorings, the code analysis rules. And I'd like to show you an example where we really are moving the ball when it comes to the development experience. So there are three key scenarios that the new Roslyn compiler enables. The first one is everyone, and I mean all developers, simply benefit from the brand new IDE experiences that I'm going about to show you in a second. Second of all, if you're a developer that wants to extend the IDE, let's say you want to write your own Roslyn-based code analysis rule to, for example, catch security issues or catch certain coding patterns, then you can do that as well. And last but not least, it's completely open source. So to give you an example, in their next version, Xamarin is going to use the Roslyn C# compiler as the basis for the next version of the product. So that's how powerful it can be as far as the open source model. Okay. Let me show you why I think Roslyn is such an amazing thing. I'm going to open an existing solution called Roslyn Demo. Again, I like to use these very, very, very simple demos because I think it just gets the point across that much easier. It's a console-based app, and all it does is basically calculates the area of a circle. Now, let's say the thing I want to do is I want to add a using statement, system.math. And what happens is, notice as soon as I moved up the line, that actual using statement got grayed out, right? And then if I were to actually put my cursor on it, there's a little light bulb that drops and says, you know what? You're not using this anywhere. You're not using this namespace anywhere in your code. Would you like to actually remove it? For now, let's just ignore that and go ahead. The next thing I can do is, as soon as I click on the statement to calculate the area of the circle, you notice another light bulb comes up. When I drop that down, it's now offering me a number of suggestions to improve my code. One of those suggestions is to simplify the type name, meaning since I'm already importing the system.math namespace, I don't need the math.py anymore. So what I can do is simply go ahead and fix it. So because the compiler in real time is completely aware of what's happening with my code, it can provide me all these suggestions right in line. So To give you an example, imagine that now being a bunch of code analysis rules. I don't have to use FXCop separately as part of my build system. I can just, as I write my code, I can see all the errors. Let's look at another ability. So now what I want to do is I want to, using Alt, comma, I just invoke the refactoring on the selected expression. You'll notice that as I move my mouse on the actual types of refactorings, it provides me suggestions in real time of what the actual outcome is. So in this case, let's say I actually want to extract the method, and once I do that, what it does is exactly like today, it basically highlights the name of the method where I can rename it. But also notice that now it gives me a number of options right in the IDE where I can expand, so to speak, my refactoring. And so in this case, one other really nice property in my mind is the fact that if I were to now name this so it collides with radius, it automatically then essentially prepends program dot just to make sure that I don't accidentally collide with my name, other symbols in my application. So this was just a tiny example of what we'll be able to do. And as I said, we just released this a few weeks ago, and since it's open source, you can actually go to roslyn.codeplex.com and download not only the SDK, but also the entire source code and see what the actual C# compiler looks like internally. Okay. The last thing that I'd like to cover is this idea of openness. So back in Build, which was about 6 weeks ago, we announced this new project called .NET Foundation. The idea behind .NET Foundation is that it serves as its own separate organization where we want to foster and encourage folks to both contribute and participate in the .NET open source community. And the way we started that is by contributing our own open source projects. So obviously, Roslyn being one of those examples, but also we actually took a lot of our existing open source frameworks such as ASP.NET, MVC, as well as SignalR, and added to the .NET Foundation as well. On top of that, because of our partnership with Xamarin, they actually also contributed a bunch of their work into the .NET Foundation as well, where if you basically were to go to now, the .NET Foundation, .org, you'll see this is the video that basically made the announcement at Build. But more importantly, you now see all these projects that are all .NET open source projects. And as I said, if you're so inclined, you can go and download any of these projects and actually not only, as I said, peruse the source code, but also if you have found a bug or if you want to add a feature, you can simply go ahead and now contribute back. And once you do that, there are folks as part of who are sort of the ambassadors of .NET Foundation. And as a community, the community decides whether a feature sort of makes it in or not. Let me click on one of these, which is the, as I said, the Roslyn project. And in fact, what you'll see is, as part of the documentation, you'll see something that's, in my mind, very, very, very unique. We now, in the open, will show our roadmap for all of our open source projects. So if you're wondering when we're going to add feature X, Y, and Z in the future, you can simply go to the Codeplex page for the project and then see exactly what things it is that we're going to add. Let's look at one of these. If you're curious to see what the proposed language features are for C#, you can see every single language feature that we're planning to do and when we're planning to do it. Just think about how powerful this model is now, right? You no longer have this black box where you're not sure whether feature X will get added or not, or you're not sure when we're going to do something. You can now see exactly when something gets requested, what the notes are around the feature being discussed or requested, and also what are we actually doing with the with each of the requests. So right now, it's amazing how many new suggestions people are making through these open source, the .NET Foundation. Now, the thing that I think truly makes things unique in my mind is what open source and Roslyn can actually do for you. And let's say you're a developer today and you want to learn more about ArrayList. And you know, you get your typical Bing results and it actually describes the syntax nicely in line. And you can go to the MSDN documentation, which lists the ArrayList class, and you can look at all its members. But wouldn't it be nice if you could actually, within the documentation, go and look at the source code for ArrayList? Imagine that now. Your actual the source code is part of the documentation in the next version of .NET framework. So you can see what's the definition of ArrayList, but more importantly, which types are using ArrayList and how are they being used. And in fact, you can see which file ArrayList is in. And I think that's a super powerful model when you think about the power of open source and Roslyn. So in the next version of .NET, you're going to see fundamental changes in how we think about documentation even, right? Where you're not going to see these stale, out-of-date sample code anymore. You're going to see the actual source code that ships with the product, and also you're going to see how that source code is being used in all of the .NET Foundation, where you can basically index into everything that's going on. And I think that's a really, really powerful way to think about how you can approach and also develop your applications going forward. Okay. This wraps up the conversation. But the thing I really want to point out is this. For the longest time, people have asked us, can you make .NET more lean? Well, with the optimized versions of .NET, that's exactly what we're doing. Can you make it open? With open source, we're fully embracing open source, both in terms of being able to see the source and also be able to contribute to it. We're exactly doing that as well. And cross-plat, where we're working with Xamarin to figure out how do you write the same .NET applications across not just Windows, but also Android and iOS as well. Now, if you guys remember, I promised you that this was just the very beginning. This is a level 200 talk, so it was simply a roadmap. I would highly, highly, highly encourage you, for those of you who want to get more details on everything that we discussed today, because this was just a breadth-first discussion, go and see at least these four talks. You're going to, in my mind, learn a lot more about where .NET is going and also get a lot more in-depth detail for everything that we discussed today. I'm going to leave this up there for a little bit in case folks want to go and see the talks. But certainly, if you're interested in the future of ASP.NET, there is at least 2 to 3 hours worth of content just for tomorrow, where you're going to learn a lot more about ASP.NET. Okay, with that, I'd like to wrap up this talk, and I'd like to thank you very much for coming.